after scores of people were arrested by police in Russia over the weekend in what observers described as the country's biggest political protest in 8 years. Russia's state communications watchdog on Sunday told Google to stop advertising what it called illegal mass events on its YouTube platform. The state communications agency said if Google does not try to stop events like these from being promoted, Russia reserved the right to respond accordingly. It did not elaborate on what that response might be.
After 20 years of negotiations, a group of South American countries, together known as Mercosur, finally reached a new free trade agreement with the EU this past June. But some here are afraid the deal is not a clear-cut win. European wines will soon be available in Argentina for cheaper prices, a concern for local producers who command the domestic market.
New freedoms for women in Saudi Arabia. A series of royal decrees on Friday have freed women to travel without having to get permission from a male guardian first. Riyadh has long been criticized for rules that require women to get the consent of a male guardian for important decisions throughout their entire lives. The new decrees state that a passport should be given to any citizen who applies for it, and that people over the age of 21 do not need permission to travel.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's August the 12th. It's 5:10 in the morning. Here we are, another business week, another business day getting underway. And we thank you for tuning in this morning to The Opening Bell. On the program today, a focus on the business of hotels and what the hotel industry is doing to fight adult trafficking and child sex trafficking. We'll tell you about a new program that's being trained out and will launch soon in hotels across the country. Chip Rogers, the president and CEO of the American Hotel and Lodging Association, will be with us in our first segment. We'll bring in Chip momentarily here this morning. A little bit later in the program on this Monday, cybersecurity in the wake of the recent Capital One breach. The question is a good one to ask. What more can be done to protect our private data and our privacy? Paul Martin is the author of The Rules of Security, Staying Safe in a Risky World. And we'll talk to Paul about all this coming up at about 5:38 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after stocks closed out last week on a negative note. The market's reacting to President Trump saying he isn't ready to strike a deal with China yet, leading the Dow to drop nearly 300 points in trading, only to rebound at the end of the day to close down 91 points. The NASDAQ was down 80. The S&P 500 was off nearly 19 points. This morning, as we look at the markets, a lot of weakness heading to the opening bell. Dow futures are down nearly 0.5% off 134 points. NASDAQ futures are off 0.5%. S&P futures off 0.5% as well. Around the globe, in Asia, the Nikkei closed today for a holiday in Japan. In Hong Kong, the Hang Seng off nearly 115 points, nearly 0.5%. In China, markets up by nearly 1.5%. And in Europe, mostly in the red this morning. In London, off nearly 0.25%. In Germany, off just a fraction. And in France, off nearly 0.25%. And oil is trading at $53.84 a barrel, which is down about 66 cents. Couple of stories as we begin this morning. A massive fire at a Kansas beef packing plant has sent nearly 3,800 employees to the unemployment line. The blaze at the Tyson Foods facility in Holcomb on Friday caused serious damage, closing the plant indefinitely. The cause of the fire still under investigation. The company says it provides some guaranteed pay to employees who've suddenly found themselves with no work. The fire could have a negative impact on the cattle market, depending on how long the plant stays closed. Party City is getting ready to close more stores. Earlier this year, the company said it would be shuttering 45 stores. Now the company CEO is upping that number to 55. The CEO says an increase in the cost of helium due to a shortage partly is to blame for the belt tightening. Anheuser-Busch is going heavier into the hard seltzer arena with something light. The world's biggest brewer coming out with a new line of spiked seltzer under its Natural Light brand Anheuser-Busch bills it as a natty light seltzer, an affordable product aimed at college-age drinkers. It'll be priced about 20% below the leading hard seltzer brands. It comes in two flavors, a peach mango flavor and a black cherry lime flavor. Anheuser-Busch says it'll be widely available in the U.S. in a few weeks. More than 100 child sex trafficking victims were rescued across the U.S. last month in an effort called Operation Independence Day that involved sweeps in Las Vegas, Atlanta, and Seattle, resulted in 67 arrests. It is just the latest crackdown in the trafficking world that others are training to help prevent, including the hotel and motel industry. Joining us this morning to talk a little bit about that is Chip Rogers, the president and CEO of the American Hotel and Lodging Association. Chip, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Glad to be with you this morning. Thanks for having me.
This is a topic that a lot of people have been not only talking about lately, but it's one that's quite concerning. The idea that hotel rooms might be used for trafficking, are being used for human trafficking. Talk to us about what your industry knows about how serious the problem is.
Well, it is a global problem. It is clearly a societal problem, and it extends obviously well beyond hotel rooms, but we want to make sure we do our part. If you take a look at what's happening around the world, it's estimated there are about 40 million people being trafficked every year. And to put that in context, that's about the size of the entire state of California. So it is a big business, again, estimated at about $150 billion annually in revenue. All of it illegal, all of it disgusting, and something that we want to help put a stop to.
The American Hotel and Lodging Association, of which you're the president and CEO, has started a program called No Room for Trafficking. Tell us about it.
So we want to be real clear. Our goal is to stop all human trafficking in hotels everywhere in the United States. And to do that, the first major step we're taking is to get all hotel employees in the entire country trained to see the signs of human trafficking and know what to do if, in fact, they see those signs, who to report it to. So this is a very big effort that's going to take a long time, but we believe that we can be successful in our industry, and we believe that we can lead by example so that other industries will join us, and some of them are already starting their own efforts so that we can put all this together and stop human trafficking.
Well, walk us through some of the training that an employee would get. What are things that they look for? What is the response they should take?
Well, that's a great question because the training is really multi-step. And where we're starting today is beginning with employees and teaching them what human trafficking is and what are some of the signs they need to look out for. And while I'm not a trainer, there are a lot of experts out there, and all that stuff is on our website. But just some of the major items, things like relationships that don't seem improper, the frequency of activity of people coming in and out of someone's guest room, are certain guests exhibiting signs of neglect or abuse? Now, none of these individually would be a sign of human trafficking, but when you begin to put them all together, it could raise some red flags. And what we want our employees to do is know who to contact. So typically a frontline employee is going to talk to their manager, and that manager will be trained who to speak with in law enforcement so they can begin asking the next step of questions to see if, in fact, it is a case of human trafficking.
Yeah, this is one of the situations where, let's say, a hotel security worker or even a housekeeping staff or a front office staff might take access to a room for whatever reason or see somebody going into a room. Talk to us about the different kinds of scenarios where something like this might come to light.
Again, a great question, because where we see training going in this area is really job specific. Right now, we're at that initial step of alerting everyone to the problem and how we can begin solving the problem. But as you pointed out, what someone who is accessing a room, is cleaning a room, what they may see is going to be completely different than what the front desk clerk may see. And it's going to be completely different to what the security person who is going to have access to the parking lot and other areas of the hotel, what they may see. So the training ultimately will need to be different for all three. But we already see some very good success, particularly in the area of security. I mean, if you have guests that are avoiding being seen on security cams, that should raise a red flag to you. So, yeah, the next step in training is making sure it's job-specific, because trafficking has all sorts of signs that we want everyone to see.
As you roll out this program and start raising even more awareness, how are you doing that? I know there are some events that have already happened and probably more are scheduled, but you're sort of rolling this out and going around the country outlining what's going to be happening going forward.
Yeah, we are. One of the things that we're doing, I think, is fairly unique for an industry is that we are supporting universal training for every hotel employee. So when we do that, we need to make sure that we're working with local elected officials. So we're actually going, as you indicated, state by state to work with those officials to make sure that the policies are in place so that every hotel in a given state, that they have training. For example, in Illinois, you have 1,500 hotels. We want to make sure that all of the people that are working in those hotels and the people whose jobs are associated directly or indirectly with those hotels understand what human trafficking is, and we're going to need the help of local elected officials to do that.
Yeah, and also local law enforcement, local and national law enforcement. What is the cooperation you're getting from those different agencies, and how important is that to make sure that this program is successful?
Oh, it is absolutely critical, and the support has been beyond what we could have imagined. We, of course, work with the Blue Campaign, which is part of the United States Department of Homeland Security, but it's not just the Department of Homeland Security. The FBI is actively involved, and really every single law enforcement agency around this country is aware of what's happening with human trafficking, and most of them have somebody on their team who is dealing specifically with human trafficking. And one of the things that we remind our hotel owners and franchisees is that you need to have that good working relationship with local law enforcement for a multitude of reasons, but this one specifically. You know, oftentimes as business owners, the last thing they want is to really have to worry about law enforcement. But the reality is that forming that good, strong working relationship can really help put an end to human trafficking and many other issues that a business owner would face.
We've been talking a lot about how industry workers are going to be involved in this, but people who stay at hotels have a big responsibility, too. I know it's sometimes said, if you see something, say something. That goes for your stay in a hotel as well, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, and we want to make sure that guests know who to reach out to. A couple of places. First of all, you can always talk to the manager that is on duty if you do, in fact, see something. But even beyond that, there is a national hotline. You can go to our website, ahla.com, and you can gain access to that. But there are a lot of ways to make sure you're reporting it. And we always remind people, don't take action into your own hands. Don't think that you're going to save the day with stopping human trafficking while it's taking place yourself. You need to make sure you're connecting with the right people and let law enforcement handle it.
As the president and CEO of the organization, have to deal with all kinds of things. There are a number of major issues. In your preparation for this job, was it ever imagined that you would have to deal with something like this and that this would be an issue that you'd have to be leading the charge on?
No. And, you know, if you go back a few years ago, I think the hotel industry is probably similar to other industries. You know, you hear things like this, and I think everybody in some way finds it disgusting, and they kind of take a step back, and they just wish it wasn't true. They wish it wasn't happening, and they wish it would just go away. But then you come to the realization that somebody needs to do something. And so we're happy to help lead on this. Our partner members across the board have been doing things on human trafficking for years. For example, Marriott has globally about 750,000 employees. They've already trained over 600,000 of those employees. We recently did a survey of all of our member companies, which is basically every major brand that you're aware of, and all of them are doing something, but we're helping unite that so that this is not a one-shot effort, that in fact this is an ongoing effort to stop human trafficking, because, you know, the end zone is a long ways away. If our goal is to completely stop human trafficking in all hotels, it's not going to happen today, it's not going to happen this year, it's not going to happen next year, but ultimately it can happen if we all unite.
We're going to link out to some more information on the No Room for Trafficking program so people can learn more about it. But while we have you on the phone, I want to ask you about the health of the Hotel and Lodging Association of your members and the industry as a whole. What do you see as, if you had to give it a report card right now, what would your grade be, and how has the economy been treating you?
Well, it's definitely an A right now. We are in the midst of a successful run unlike anything we've ever seen. Occupancy rates are up. Revenue is up for hotels, and hotels are continuing to expand. And the good part about that is that it's allowing more people to travel. And we saw that last year. More people stayed in a hotel in the United States than ever before. Domestic travel is higher than it's ever been before. Well, there are some concerns about international travel. While it's still up, the U.S. is losing a portion of our global market share on international travel, but more people are coming to the U.S. So we certainly want to send that welcoming message to everyone around the globe, but But right now, hotels are healthy. Business is good, and we encourage everyone to get out, enjoy a vacation, and stay at a hotel.
Yeah, when people talk about the economy, whether or not it's good or bad, generally tourism is a pretty good indication of whether something is going on, either good or bad, isn't it?
It is, and you know, there's a lot of factors there. One is that all of our partner companies, they're expanding. They're building more hotels. You have more access to more different types of hotels than you've ever had before. You know, there's the entire spectrum from the luxury hotels you might find in downtown Chicago to some of your interstate hotels and everything in between. So the opportunity to find the right price point, to find the right experience is there for all travelers. And then, frankly, right now, it's a low-cost time to travel. I mean, with the price of fuel where it is, you can get in your car and you can travel, and airline costs aren't too much. So we encourage people to take those vacation days they might not have taken and enjoy their time in a hotel.
Are there any other challenges or any other highlights of things that you would like to let the people know about as we have you on the air today?
No, we just believe that this issue of human trafficking is, in fact, a societal issue. So while we're doing our part to stop it in hotels, we're also encouraging all other industries to join us and make sure that they are recognizing and training their employees as well, whether it be in, you know, we hear of the ride-sharing industry is now stepping into this. The airline industry has for some time been working on this. So collectively together, we can stop it. But it is a serious problem and one we can't hide from. And we'll do our part, and we encourage everyone else to do theirs.
Well, Chip, we appreciate you being on with us this morning. All the best to everybody in your industry and at your association.
Thank you so much.
Chip Rogers, President and CEO of the American Hotel and Lodging Association. You can find more online at AHLA.com. That's AHLA.com. There's also a link there on the front page for more on the No Room for Trafficking campaign.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell after another cyber breach. This one at Capital One, we're asking the question, what more can be done to protect our privacy and sensitive data? And joining us this morning to talk some more about that is Paul Martin, author of The Rules of Security, Staying Safe in a Risky World. Paul is also the Principal Research Fellow for Security and Technology at Imperial College in London, the former Director of Security for the United Kingdom Parliament. Paul, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Hi. Good to talk to you.
I want to begin with, you know, as we sit here today having this interview, we're recovering from the latest breach involving Capital One. Of course, the Equifax thing has also been in the news again lately. Where does the landscape stand? I mean, we still see these giant breaches and there's no end in sight to them.
I think that's about right, really. There is effectively a kind of arms race going on between the cybersecurity defenders who are working hard to find better defenses, and the attackers who are very innovative and smart and are finding new ways to breach those defenses. And some of the big breaches have been quite sophisticated, but some of them have been relied on the fact that it's still the case that a lot of people and a lot of organizations make some basic mistakes and they fail to do basic things. So quite often it's because their systems aren't properly patched, and had they protected themselves to a basic level, they wouldn't have fallen foul of the attack.
Yeah, there's been this criticism of companies that, first of all, they wait too long to tell everybody about what's just happened, but they're more playing defense than offense.
Yeah, it is difficult for the companies, and this is where governments have a role to play in, for example, putting more pressure on companies both to improve their security and to take quick action. So in Europe, the General Data Protection Regulation, which came out last year, really places huge fines on companies that fail to protect their data adequately. And they've got to report it really quickly. They've essentially got 72 hours to report it to the authorities and take appropriate action. So some of this is down to legislation. But obviously companies themselves, they've got a lot to lose. It's not just money, it's reputation, shareholder confidence, customer confidence, disruption to their business, and so on. There's a lot of money being lost through this stuff.
As a consumer, I feel extremely vulnerable because even though I might be able to find ways to protect myself and get advice from experts like you about it, there's really a lot. There's really nothing that can be done when my information is with Capital One or Equifax, and all of a sudden they've been breached, and now I'm a victim.
You're right. We often do have to share information with a whole range of commercial entities to get the stuff we need for everyday life. Of course, some other companies hoover up our information without us knowing about it. A lot of free online services are free because we are the product, and what they're getting from it is our personal data. So there are some things people can do. I mean, we can be a bit thoughtful about what information we volunteer about ourselves. And stuff like passwords, for example, if you use a really simple, easily guessable password, and you use the same password for all of your accounts, if one of them gets breached, the whole lot goes, and you've got big, big trouble in your personal life, potentially. So there are things you can do that will limit the damage if one of your passwords gets breached, for example, or one of the companies you're registered with gets breached. You don't want it spreading to everything else in your digital life.
Who are the biggest threat actors here? What are the biggest threats, and where do they come from?
Well, in the digital world, the volume is from crime, serious organized crime, and individuals. And it's a vast global industry. I mean, you don't have to be a computer genius anymore. There's old sort of 1980s, 1990s Hollywood images of the, you know, the teenage computer whiz with the hoodie kind of tapping away on the keyboard. That's just not the way it is now. It's, you can go online, you can download malware for free or for very little money. You can even get people, online criminals, to carry out attacks for you. You can go online onto the dark web and you can buy passwords, you can buy people's credit card details and medical records, and it's all out there for sale. So criminals are the big ones, but they're not the only ones, of course. I mean, hostile foreign state, very active in this world. We've had, you know, Russia interfering with elections in your country, in my country, in other Western countries, you know, pushing out fake news and propaganda, trying to sort of change the way people think. We've had other nation states, China's a particular example, of stealing intellectual property, so stealing kind of trade information from companies that have spent maybe millions or billions of dollars on research, and then it's sitting on computers, and then somebody else can just steal it for almost nothing. Why spend all the money on research when you can just steal the data? So there are lots of people out there doing this. Terrorists use digital media, not for attacking generally. There isn't really such a thing as cyber terrorism, but terrorists certainly use the technology. They use it to radicalize, they use it to spread propaganda, they use it to communicate secretly with each other. So pretty well everybody who's got bad intentions is out there using digital media one way or another.
And there are a couple of different types of attacks that have been becoming commonplace. One of them is something that a lot of folks have been falling prey to, called ransomware attacks. The other two, cyber sabotage. Talk to us a little bit about both of these.
Yeah, so ransomware is primarily intended to make money. So it's something that's largely used by criminals, although one of the biggest ransomware attacks in 2017 came from North Korea, and another one actually came from Russia. And in both cases, the malware spread around the world. So what ransomware does is it gets onto your machine and it encrypts all the data. It locks up all the records on your machine so you can't get at them. And then it sends you a message saying, pay me so much money. It's usually in the form of Bitcoin or some other cryptocurrency. Pay me this money and you can have your data back. It literally ransoms the data for money. And places like hospitals have been attacked. In the UK in 2017, the National Health Service was very, very badly affected by the WannaCry ransomware, which did come from North Korea. Fortunately, somebody found a way of turning it off the same day, so it was only a matter of hours, but it caused huge disruption. Cyber sabotage is, in some ways, much more worrying, because cyber sabotage is about causing physical effects. And we haven't really seen a great deal of it, but it's about doing things like turning off the electricity supply or causing machines to self-destruct or bringing down the communications network. But probably the best-known example is the Stuxnet attack, which was against the Iranian nuclear bomb program. So some really clever software was used to make the machines that the Iranians were using to refine uranium to make nuclear weapons to self-destruct. And that was done by changing the software on the computers. Very clever attack. But there are, once you get onto an industrial control system, the sort of thing that runs industrial processes, you can cause physical effects that could potentially kill lots of people. So cyber sabotage is really something that, you know, governments around the world are paying serious attention to.
Every once in a while, we hear a utility company say that there's been some sort of intrusion. Somebody's gotten in and they've been looking around, but nothing has happened. Is that a precursor to perhaps an attack in the future? Is that what's going on there?
Sometimes it is. And one of the terms that's used in the cybersecurity world is preparing the battlefield. And the worrying thing is that if an adversary can get onto your operational technology, onto your industrial control system, let's say you're running an electricity grid and you're supplying a big part of the nation with electricity, if somebody can get onto your network and snoop around looking at it, they can leave malware there, and that malware could potentially turn it all off. It could corrupt the data. It could do anything. So if you can get onto the network, you can do almost anything. I mean, it has been likened to sort of planting bombs, and you don't necessarily set the bombs off, but the bombs are there nonetheless, and they could cause harm if they were activated.
Paul, so much of what happens in terms of cyber attacks and even the victims, specifically the victims of it, has a lot to do with humans, being humans. We do make a lot of decisions as humans that put us in jeopardy and somehow help some of these cyber actors. If that's the case, how do we really protect ourselves in the future with that human element involved?
That's a really good question, and one of the points I really make in the book is that when you're thinking about security, you need to think about not just physical security and not just digital security, but also the human element. The human element cuts across everything. I mean, the threat actors are humans, the victims are humans, the security expert, you know, it's all about human behavior. And if you can understand how people think and how they tick, then you're in a better position both to attack and defend. So a lot of cyber attackers exploit human behavior. They do stuff like social engineering, where they pretend to be a trusted person, like a colleague in the company. And they get people to give out sensitive information, like passwords, for example. Another one is phishing emails, where, you know, you get an email, it seems to be from a colleague, and it says, click on this attachment, and you click on the attachment, and before you know it, there's malware on your system, and it's infected. So they're exploiting human psychology. But there's a lot that can be done about this, and of course, psychologists have been studying human behavior and human thinking for more than a century, so there's a lot of knowledge out there about how we tend to think and behave. And one of the big trends in cybersecurity now is finally the cybersecurity industry has recognized that cybersecurity isn't just a technology problem with technology solutions. You have to think about the human dimension as well.
Can you leave us this morning with maybe one or two pieces of advice? I know you mentioned having different passwords for things, but if you were to do one thing this morning to protect yourself, what would it be?
I think, well, if it's digital security, I think it's making sure your just your software is patched and up to date. More generally, I think it's what's called situational awareness, which is just sort of being aware of what the main threats to security are, and they will change over time. There are the physical ones of, you know, possibly being attacked in the street, although that's very unlikely for most people in most places most of the time, and the digital ones. So just kind of keeping up to speed with what's going on, because the threats are evolving very rapidly all the time. So last year's advice will be out of date by next year.
Paul, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Paul Martin is the author of The Rules of Security, Staying Safe in a Risky World. He's also Principal Research Fellow for Security and Technology at Imperial College in London. Again, the name of the book, The Rules of Security, Staying Safe in a Risky World. Paul Martin, the author.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures losses are building this morning heading to the opening bell. Dow futures are off 212 points. More than 0.75% this morning. S&P futures are off nearly 0.75%. NASDAQ futures are down more than 0.75% this morning. So a weak open expected a little later on Wall Street. Still lots of concerns over the trade war between the U.S. and China. Now agriculture and commodities. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. It's going to be a big day for grain producers and grain traders because at 11 o'clock this morning, the U.S. Department of Agriculture will release the August crop report that will include revisions. How big or how small, we don't know yet, but in the June report that was criticized and left a lot of people confused on how many acres of corn and soybeans were planted this spring and those that were not planted because of the wet weather. And so at 11 o'clock today is the fact that we'll see what kind of facts we get. Also, Beyond Meats has shelved plans to enter the Japanese market. They're going to be focusing more on the U.S. market, where it recently bolstered funding to fuel an expansion and beat out emergency fake rivals. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of stories before we leave you here this morning. A developing story in the world of mergers. The boards of CBS and Viacom reportedly have been negotiating all night long to try to hash out a price for a merger, according to people familiar with the matter, quoted by Bloomberg. The company's aiming to strike a deal in time to announce a merger sometime today. The deal would unite the most-watched U.S. broadcast network with the owner of the Paramount movie studios and cable channels such as MTV and Nickelodeon. The international airport in Hong Kong had to cancel all remaining flights for the day after thousands of pro-democracy protesters crowded into the main terminal. One of the world's busiest airports says the demonstration seriously disrupted airport operations and that all check-in services for departing flights had been suspended. The airport says only those flights that have been completed with the check-in process were going to move ahead. Hong Kong has experienced more than 2 months of these massive protests. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, outlook for Monday, August the 12th, the federal budget numbers for July are due out today. Economists see the budget deficit expanding almost tenfold. The experts forecast a budget gap of $78 billion, nearly 10 times the $8 billion gap recorded in June. Also today, Tencent Music and Saudi Aramco earnings are due out today. As we look ahead to the rest of the week, Germany inflation numbers tomorrow, U.S. inflation numbers as well. We'll get retail sales from China on Wednesday, Germany and Europe GDP, U.K. inflation also on Wednesday. Thursday, we'll get a really good snapshot of how retail companies are doing in the U.S., U.S. retail sales, also earnings from big companies like JCPenney and Walmart. So a lot of things that could move the markets throughout the week and today, this Monday, August the 12th.